I can just give you a little bit of me. So I'm going to talk about video games in the way that I usually talk about them. I don't play video games and hate them. It's October 7th, 2009.
And this is Idle Thumbs 46. And I'm Chris Remo.
I'm Nick Brecken.
And I'm Jake Rodkin.
And it's been a year since we started doing Idle Thumbs again as a podcast.
Yeah.
Give or take a few days.
Yep. I think Saturday is the real.
If you subdivide by the Gregorian.
Yeah.
On the Julian calendar, it's been a year, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
No.
Someone does, and we'll tell you why it's not a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. So it's weird that we've been doing this for almost a year.
With very few gaps. I don't think we actually expected that to occur.
Yeah. We think we missed. We had maybe 2 weeks where there wasn't anything other than or 3 weeks where there wasn't one of us saying, there's no podcast this
week.
Yeah.
So that's good for us.
We definitely didn't expect that.
We didn't expect us to be so
there's probably audio awesome. Of us. There's probably audio of us like on Chris's computer not expecting that at
from
all.
From the first episode.
Right,
first
yeah,
episode.
Right.
Well, this will never last.
Yeah. Well, we're shit and hate everything about this.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. So now you can hear us patting ourselves on the back for the first 5 minutes of this episode.
Yeah.
Hooray for us.
Yeah, that's good your job. Reward.
I celebrated with some Red Faction Gorilla.
Oh, man. And we're celebrating that
Fork
seg.
Open a bottle of Red Faction.
I'm super late to the party on this one. Everyone else played this game like 6 months ago or whenever else they played it. But I've had it in my Steam list for ages at this point. I was actually looking forward to this game. And then I just never...
You beat me to it.
I never loaded it up. Yeah, I beat you to it. In this mad dash to play Red Faction Gorilla.
Yeah.
I got to it first.
Gorilla.
Yeah, the other day I loaded it up. This game is hilarious.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
I sort of expected it to be funny based on the demo, which I did play a million years ago, largely because of the crazy robot you get in that just completely flails all of its limbs around like a madman as its mode of conveyance. But the actual real game is funny for much... stranger reasons. Like, you start this game and you're, you know, colonist on Mars or a miner on Mars or some kind of worker on Mars.
You're on Mars.
Maybe.
You're on Mars and you're, you know, this is not news to anyone, but it was so funny to me. You start off and your brother's like, all right, what's up? We're here on this place and we've got to go destroy some stuff. And immediately, of course, what you start doing when you load up this game is just swinging your big ass sledgehammer like a crazy person. Cause what else are you going to do?
Yeah.
And as I'm having this conversation with my brother in the game, my character's like, I'm no terrorist, as I'm just completely demolishing this building with my big hammer. And he's like, no, I'm not either, but we've got to do this. And you're like, I'm just doing honest work here. As you're just
like
knocking down
cities. Like,
yeah. It's amazing. There's like, the best part about it is that the story is done completely straight. You know, like, the game doesn't allude to the fact that this is totally ludicrous.
Yeah.
It's sort of all video games are like this. This one is just way more overt about it. But it really made me reflect on the fact that when we play video games, we essentially enter this unspoken contract with the developer. Where the developer's like, look, we're going to, like, have a story that's really serious... And where everything, you know, is like...
But see, I think that contract is actually with their publisher. It just, to me, it feels like all that stuff was, you know, we need stuff for the trailers. And then we're going to also create this crazy game where you knock down a building.
That might sometimes be the case, but I think you might be giving people the benefit of the doubt. I think every team with a story like that, there's at least one guy or one group that's like serious business right now.
Right.
And then...
We tell them the plight of these workers on Mars.
But
and
at the same
like,
time, you might just crash a tank through a building and then watch it fall on a guy or whatever.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, this game to me is just like a really extreme version, like microcosm of the entire, right? I mean, in games in general, you've got the developer basically saying, so this is like, this is a serious story. You're worried about your dead relatives or friends or whatever. Meanwhile, your character is invariably just a completely insane sociopath who runs around killing everything and jumping around.
Windowsills and throwing crates all over the place and like looting people's houses.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, in Red Faction, as soon, like, didn't waste a second. As soon as I get into the main hub or the main, like, safe house where you start, not the main one, I guess, but the first one you come across, I immediately just start destroying the entire thing. And these, you know, all my, like, little buddies are just kind of walking around, hanging out, and then occasionally they'll just say things like, oh, can't believe what the world's coming to.
Like, yeah, I love those. I'm in the background just like
dismantling this entire thing.
They're all passive aggressively talking about you.
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. Letting the riffraff in these days. I don't know what's going on. And then you get your first mission. And of course, basically what it comes down to is like, hey there, faction man. Like, we, on behalf of the workers of the Red Faction, we need you to go beat the shit out of this building with a big ass hammer. And it's like, what? I don't know. It's awesome. This game is super fucking fun.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
I hope the developer internally acknowledges how ludicrous everything about this is.
Well, there's
is.
An ostrich hammer, so I have to assume that
that's true.
that somewhere someone some knows point. What's going on.
Yeah.
It's one of those, like, I don't know. I played the first Red Faction years and years ago, and I don't remember really anything about the plot. I think this is supposed to be more of a follow-up to Red Faction 1, but I don't really remember,
you know,
what the Red Faction did in that game or anything. But
is that game also just about knocking stuff over and running things into other things till they fall?
I think the original, I thought the original Red Faction had more to do with...
Is the game actually about that at all?
Red Faction was more like underground, right?
It was the geo engine or whatever, and it was all about, you know, actually tunneling through land.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I mean, I only saw you guys play for about 10 minutes, and it was just you were knocking things over, and then knocking more things over, then crashing into things, then jumping out of your vehicle, and knocking down the first floor of a building until it fell down on itself.
Yeah. When this game was announced, everyone was like, "Oh man, you can't deform the land." And secretly, the developer was like, you know, we don't need that shit. This is way more hilarious.
So the game got dinged for not having deformable terrain, because it looks like from when you were driving around, everything falls over, everything explodes. The terrain itself is not deformable.
You just knock the walls out of a building
until the building falls over.
Yeah, like, no, the tech is incredible.
No one lets you do that in any game. It's great.
It's amazing. It's like everything. And, you know, but I don't know. It is basically
the real technological innovation is that. Like animation one dot whatever, like just like the initial swing, the side swipe swing.
Right. This guy is a complete maniac.
Yeah.
Like, this is a frightening guy. I mean, when you run up to bat, when you run out of ammo and you run up to the dudes to hit them with your hammer, it's fucking terrifying.
It's hilarious.
Like, this would be the most frightening thing you could ever see if you saw this fucking crazy guy just run up to you and just smack your buddy in the skull with his big sledgehammer. It's fucked up. It's a crazy game. Like, I don't know.
At some point, what did he say? Like, you killed like three people in a row, and then he said something like, "Oh man, like I really regret that." Like, what did he say? Like, it was crazy.
The whole game, I mean, it's that weird disconnect where the whole game plays itself straight. Like, Red Faction, like, this game should just be called, like, Space Asshole.
Yeah.
That's what this game should be. It's like, you run around and destroy everything.
Yeah.
And that helps. I'm helping.
It's Red Faction, get your ass to Mars.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. God, Nick was describing an amazing scenario where the group that you're terrorizing is like back on Earth or something.
Yeah,
there's some kind of like the classic scene from the movie where you're in a room. And there's like, "General, we've got a situation." It's like, "What's going on? We've got some kind of terrorist up on Mars."
And then it cuts to the video camera of just like swinging in a building, like
running around with a hammer.
Oh my god!
Mother of God!
Just hitting the same building.
Just sort of see it crack like a tree and fall down.
Yeah.
The image to me that's good is the is him like being sort of out of focus, and you see this little figure in the background of this huge hammer running around swinging it.
Yeah, you see the guy in the foreground. It's like, sir, we've got a situation. Yeah, and you see the guy behind him in the video projection. Like,
right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should try to make that video.
That may be in DLC.
Based on some kind of stock footage of a general.
Of a general saying, sir, we've got a situation that exists, maybe?
It's got to.
I mean, like, I'm sure. I mean,
you just rotoscope it out of a Command & Conquer game?
I just mean, like, what, like from like Total Recall or something, there's got to be, you know, that equivalent scene.
That might exist.
Like, there's something going on Mars. Like, you know, we've got a situation. Right. Yeah.
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 Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
But I don't know. This game it's fun. It's super fun. I don't know if anyone still hasn't played it, but it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just amazing situations where you'll be in a buggy or like a space buggy or whatever, and you'll, you know, just do a jump over some rocks and then fly over enemies and plow, like do a barrel roll in midair and then plow directly into like a huge fuel tank and then jump out of your vehicle and take out your hammer as you're falling. And then as everything explodes, as your vehicle is causing this insane chain reaction, you are immediately smacking a guy's skull into the ground with your big ass.
You know
hammer.
What it is? It's
crazy.
It's that you can do that, but within this like utterly mundane space world where people are just sort of like meandering around.
Yeah.
And, like,
this is our
everything's
mining
under
colony.
Control, and like the people don't really say much. They're just kind of happy to be alive.
Right. That's where you have the guy who's just talking to his friend, like reading the gas meter, taking a note. Yeah. Like, what the fuck is that? And then just like looking up.
Did
at 100
feet yesterday.
Up,
right? Just like,
ugh, flattened by Jeep, or just by steel tank beast.
And then the hammer, you know, just instant death.
Well, that's like, you know,
just, see the game, just that guy's head is gone.
Yeah, it's like
we
a cartoon.
Saying, that's like the opening scene of the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's the guys like on with like a newspaper.
Yeah, right.
You know, on the bench, the fuel station or whatever.
And the moon rover just flips over his
spirals into
a 720 spin over his head.
Yeah.
You roll out and kill 20 guys and then cut to the general.
Yeah, and then it gives you a multiplier for
Mother of God. What the fuck is going on Mars? Yeah. Right, and then it cuts up to the guy.
Yeah.
Just, oh, I don't know! Everything went to shit. You see that guy just spinning past with his hand.
Yeah.
This is like, this is what it must be like for the dudes who are mining in an RTS. Like, you know, before the war really gets on, when they're just walking back and forth.
We're just resource gathering here. Oh, shit.
Oh, my God.
Right. That's the POV of the guy in, like, a CNC or StarCraft game when you're playing on the internet. And it's like, your guys are just like, just harvesting my Tiberium here. Yeah. Oh, fuck. Like, 8,000 guys just uncloak and just rape you. Like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you see that up in the sky? Just, like, nuclear strikes.
Right.
Yeah, that probably happens.
They should have this game. They should be, you know, like what Eve is doing with the like guys on the ground.
Oh yeah, right. This is the Eve game. Yeah.
This is like that part of that. Right. You've got to just mine the shit out of everything. While
that would be fucking hilarious. Eve is so god. It's like dead serious, right? All these space nerds like collating their accounts and
and
subtracting decimals.
Sort of the giant Citizen Kabuto of MMOs. Right, one guy is Kabuto, but he's this guy instead of flipping guy.
Well, it's like, it's like, oh shit, what's the PSN downloadable game with the moon and everything? Ah!
Shutter?
No. Damn it, Katamari Guy made it.
Nobi Boy,
yeah. Yeah, you're like,
what if this guy is?
That's what I mean, like the Nobi Boy is going on underneath Eve.
Oh, you're saying like the equivalent of that? You zoom in the camera more and more. Suddenly, it's just like,
what is going on?
What the fuck is this?
And that's determining the sway of like power amongst thousands of
vast
people, just
economic
like,
forces.
On your asteroids, this weird sort of tube creature, sort of just eating weird
little
Lucky Charms.
It's like the end of Men in Black. It's like the opposite of that, where it zooms in and zooms in and zooms in, that it's like
the inner workings of
this grand Eve universe. It's like weird little robot like spinning around and like
someone's controlling me.
Yeah.
I always wish that games would do that. I know it would be completely impossible, but if just like, what if GTA 4 and Burnout Paradise were the same game?
Yeah.
We've probably talked about that before.
Right.
It would be really enjoyable.
Well,
and like, Nobi Boy is on one roof in GTA. Every rooftop in GTA is someone's Nobi Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Specifically with this game, though, I feel like it actually could have been improved if it had just been simply like Blast Corps. Like if it, if they just stripped away all of the, you know, plot nonsense and just let you blow up buildings.
If it is
and
just it, space asshole, I mean, if
yeah, exactly. Really just, yeah, if that was it and it was just like stage two, now you're, you know.
I ha- honestly, though, part of my enjoyment of it is from
it
that
is true.
Weird,
yeah.
surreal
it's like there's,
disconnect.
There's, I guess I feel like they would have
pseudo-narrative yeah. dissonance.
Yeah.
yeah.
I think they may have sold more copies if it had been space asshole. yeah, right. If they called it like space zombie asshole.
Right.
Zombies
more zombies,
space.
God. Yeah. That would have been one less copy sold to me.
Yeah.
I could not be more sick of zombies at this point. I mean, I'm
you
sure I'm not
zombies?
The only one, but
oh, man.
It's just, it's getting ridiculous. Like,
like
I'm,
when they're versus a ninja?
I'm definitely, you know, I'm excited about Left 4 Dead 2, but it's getting, you know, I feel like
those
Valve
are,
sort of
in, those are
got
infected.
In, like on the ground floor it's sort the of the game zombie obsession.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, infected.
They don't rise from the dead.
Yeah. Well.
And that was only last year.
I know.
Think grade. About how much has
in,
happened
in
the
year
in
the
zombie
since.
Genre.
Well, it really seems like specifically in the last couple months,
mm-hmm.
it's been just
it's
absolute zombie
games.
Announcement
yeah.
madness. Yeah.
Zombie madness. Yeah, that's a good one.
Is that one?
No, I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, they're
like when they fought a plant. Remember that time?
That game was more fun than I thought it would be, actually. I thought it was yeah. going to be bad.
Everyone,
it was actually
everyone
pretty
liked
fun.
The plants
it was
zombies.
A fairly clever, yeah. Cool. So that's Red Faction, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's pretty good. I'll play more of it.
The best part was when the building collapsed.
Yeah. Well, there was a cool little mission you can do where you have to destroy a building as quickly as possible, and you just shoot for
it's like the Red Faction version of the Street Fighter car thing.
Yeah, except it's actually like, you know, a real metered thing in the game, and you get points and stuff for it. It's just a little side mission you can just run come across in the world. It's an open world like every game now, I guess, and you know, it's just you have to beat the time to completely demolish this tower. It's actually pretty fun. I mean, I guess that's sort of, Nick, what you were
more
alluding to, but I like there being this core of just total bullshit.
It's
where it's like the game makes just this token effort to act like you care about this, and it's completely serious voiceover.
Well,
and
like, do the Commandos, do those games have a storyline that runs through them, or is Commandos just like, do a mission, take out 16 dudes?
With the Capcom game?
I'm thinking of Commandos, right? That's the one, what is the name of the game where it's just like six special ops guys, where there's the bomb defusing guy, and, oh, come on.
The ones that are like Commandos behind enemy lines?
I think so, or it's all, they started off as isometric, really nice looking games, yeah. And I think they're real-time 3D at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I've never actually played those, but I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Okay, never mind. I just, because that is a game where it is just sort of about solve a sort of situation in a specific way. You pick the guys you want. Da, da,
right.
Da.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I don't think that it's like...
That Red Faction is not like that.
Yeah.
No, but I mean... it's a game where you are deployed to do certain things.
Right.
But I don't think that it's like, Frank's got a drinking problem or whatever. It's just like,
oh, right. I see.
I'm a heavy weapons guy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
never mind. It's sort of...
I know what you mean.
Halfway
it's
between
like missions and like chapters.
Yeah, but I mean, the game still sort of has character and a feel of a world, but it doesn't try to have...
Right.
There's just no connect.
To my memory, there's not an ongoing narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's not just a puzzle game or destroy a building in 45 seconds.
Yeah, there are actually fairly few games like that now.
Destroy a building in 45
seconds?
Well,
just what you're describing of sort of like, there's a world that's...
Yeah.
You know, it's not abstract. Like, it's an actual world that's supposed to be set somewhere, but there's also not a connecting narrative or, like, hub or open world thing. I mean, pretty much everything now, there's, like, a big grand narrative that we all pretend matters.
It makes games good.
Mm.
Yeah, I guess so.
It gives you something to get excited by that you then won't care about once you buy it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It gives them something to make trailers out of.
Like Nick said earlier.
Yeah.
Well played, Brecken.
Thanks.
Point to Breedon.
Yeah.
Video games.
Like a compute game.
You've seen that Ripper? The Ripper?
Yeah.
I haven't.
Have you not seen the actual news or anything? So, if you remember a while back, one of the guys from EA Redwood Shores, or now Visceral Games, said something like, I mean, I was talking to Nick, I couldn't find the quote.
Well,
but
it's like, this isn't the only classic thing.
Yeah,
we're
it's
doing.
Like, we'll certainly be doing more adaptations of classic works or whatever.
The classic works of Jack the Ripper?
Well, I think what they basically meant, we decided, was just sort of general
historical
on like malarkey. Public domain knowledge right. Or right. writings or yeah.
So they're gonna
free content.
They're gonna hardcoreify.
Yeah,
it's like a license, but you don't need to pay a license.
Yeah, exactly.
Fee.
Right, yeah. But they can still basically call dibs on it.
Right.
By just being the first one, like the first one to sink this many millions into Dante's Inferno, sort of guarantees Activision won't.
Right.
But yeah, they're making, I guess, Jack the Ripper, or the Ripper.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, maybe create your own Ripper. Maybe it doesn't have to be Jack. Maybe you have access so like, to a wide variety.
Or it's just your gamer tag, the Ripper.
Yeah, right.
So you're the idle thumb, the Ripper.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, don't. I didn't say that on the internet.
Whatever. My friend list is full. It doesn't make any difference.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can rip
also,
the shit
it's
out
the
of
idle
things.
Thumb. Sorry.
Even
do you have the description?
I don't have it on me, but I mean, I want to first, before we actually read the description, I want to admit that even after Dante's Inferno being what it is, and, you know, whatever your opinion of that game is, it's fine, but the, you know, even after that, I was trying to think, how do they make a Jack the Ripper game? And I'm like, well, they're not going to make you be Jack the Ripper, right? I mean, they're not going to make you be the murderer.
That, is that not what it is? Because that's what I thought it would be. I thought it would be period manhunt.
You mean, really?
Yeah.
Well, it's sort of, it's not either of those things really. And so, but I was trying
to
think.
Are you an inspector with a dark past?
No. And so I'm like, how could they, even though it's that team, I was still
you
trying to be like, this could be an amazing game. You know, if you're actually trying to track down this killer and there's like crazy, you know, we were talking about detective games just a couple weeks ago.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's amazing stuff you could do with this. And then of course, I think Destructoid has a bunch of details from the game. We don't actually know if these are confirmed, but
they probably are.
They're probably real.
So the semen floor is rising. What,
Nick? No. Do you have that?
Yeah,
you have it loaded up?
I have it. Yeah. I have it now. Yeah. So this isn't confirmed, but here we go. He's a supernatural slayer.
Damn it!
Already awesome here.
Protecting people from demons, vampires, and other evil monsters
and prostitutes.
What?
Well, I mean, that's who he actually killed.
And seeing as this how this is Visceral Studios, don't expect your typical played out demons. Instead, imagine a cross between the monsters from Dead Space and Dante's Inferno. Jack will have an assortment of over the top weapons to take on these demons, and we're told gameplay involves a special ability that lets him slow down time too.
Nice. They're covering the bases.
So,
I barely got that out.
So it's Dead Space meets God of War meets Dead Space.
Max Payne.
Dead Space.
Yeah, right. Because that's got sort of the slowing down. Yeah.
Well, no, because I mean, they said it's Dead Space meets Dante's Inferno, and Dante's Inferno is Dead Space meets God of War.
Oh God.
Right. Good point.
So eventually, this is awesome.
They're all meeting each other.
The
video game singularity.
The actual Visceral Games library, if you map them all out and sort of meets, it'll just be like a Mandelbrot set that you can zoom out forever, and it all sort of infinitely
it's
references
all Dead
itself.
Space? Yeah. Yeah, right.
Every single one always has Dead Space next to it in this weird sort of infinite spiral.
Right.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
Like 20 years from now, it's going to be amazing.
God.
Their master plan will be unveiled.
You don't even want to know what Dead Space 2 is like. That game is like a recursive explosion of insanity.
Dead Space meets Dead Space 2. Meets Dante's Inferno. Meets what we think the Ripper is going to be like, probably. Meets Dead Space 2. What? Meets Dead Space, what is it?
Extraction?
Dead Space meets Dead Space Extraction meets Dead Space 2 meets God of War.
You gonna keep going at this?
Meets DJ Hero.
Okay. Probably one of these will at one point.
Meet DJ
but it,
Hero?
I'm
Hello!
I'm,
awkward!
God,
we have nothing in common!
Man, yeah, right. But, I mean, I assume you guys saw the IGN, like, Music Hub.
Yeah.
Jesus.
The music
The
Music Chub.
I'm pretty sure it's
this separate than the Guitar Hero thing?
No.
No, this is. They're Music Hub.
Oh, get this. They're the same thing, but that's why eyebrows were going up.
No, because there was a site that they launched maybe like a month ago before Guitar Hero 5 came out that was specifically all Guitar Hero stuff.
Then I guess they renamed it to Music Hub.
It's musicchub.ign.com.
Yeah. Musichub.
There were some eyebrows raised and monocles dropped.
Yeah.
Because if this it's the IGN Music Hub, but it's only about the Hero brands and
right.
like they haven't
no,
they haven't
yeah.
they have the article
about
harmonics.
This. yeah. weeks ago. Yeah.
But, really? Everyone's exploding over it now.
Yeah, I know. I was on top of that.
Oh, man.
No, no but it's weird. I looked at the site now. They've changed it. They've thrown in other stuff other than guitar. Like, before, it was even more...
The Harmonix page, though, is the most egregious one, where it's like, Harmonix developed the first two Guitar Hero games and then were acquired by EA and MTV Games. The Guitar Hero games were then picked up by Neversoft.
Right.
Yeah, That's Harmonix page.
Yeah.
Like, Harmonix has made three games, actually. Guitar Hero, Guitar Hero 2, and Guitar Hero 80s. Oh. In case you're wondering, they've made three games. It says so on musichub.ign.com. So that's pretty amazing. Anyway, the Ripper. I'm really disappointed in myself, honestly, for allowing my imagination to be like, maybe they're doing... sat there and was like trying to think about, you know, the cool stuff.
Actually, you play a serial killer, but he's a good guy now and has magical powers.
And he kills demons.
Right. Supernatural.
It's like
he has magic powers.
Yeah, why? He's a wizard. Why not? Yeah, right.
Jack what they the meant wizard. To call it the wizard, yeah. or the wizard,
the wizard.
Yeah,
yeah.
R I Z Z E R. It's just gross. A simple. It was like a cipher substitution. It's sort of ARG to find out the true title of the game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What you're a supernatural character in, you know, sort of living in history who fights demons and protects people.
Named Mr. Wizard?
It's the wizard. No, the wizard.
The wizard?
Know? That was like Cockney slang for the wizard in, you know.
In, you know, olden
Victorian
times.
Era London.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when wizards were around, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, probably.
1880.
Yeah. I think that was the age of the wizard.
The steampunk wizard.
The age of wizardry. Yeah. Well documented.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to follow because Jesus was born in year one, right, not zero.
Right.
Moving on to the river.
Yeah.
Have we moved past
I don't
the
even
river?
Know what to say about the river. Yeah.
I don't know.
So, it's dismaying to me. It's too
maybe
bad.
Maybe they're just laying a false scent and actually
that would be amazing if they leaked false gameplay details to Destructoids just so they could blow people away later with the real good Jack the Ripper.
Just kidding. You're just not kidding. A supernatural wizard who fights demons that we call Jack the Ripper. It actually is about Jack the Ripper and it's interesting.
Right. Good one, EA. Well played.
Oh, yeah. That'd
be amazing.
Yeah.
Won't happen.
No.
What an amazing... Okay, weird.
It's especially, you know, it's impressive, too, that video games are outstripping comic books to just make the most retarded versions of everything.
Yeah.
It's, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't know.
What if Sherlock Holmes was a rapist?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean... You look at, like, other fictional...
Jesus fights his way out. Like, I don't know.
Right. You thought it ended on the cross.
Oh, God. Jesus, the world is yours.
This is going to be one of the predictions that we get right.
I know, yeah.
EA already... licenses the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're digging our own grave. Gaming's grave.
Moses 2. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, you're the descendant of Moses, and you have to, you know, it's like Assassin's Creed. You've got it. You have a genetic memory of Moses, and you have to go back and part the Red Sea.
There's still some guys left being, you know,
ass.
Held by the Egyptians.
Right,
yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pharaoh's got another thing coming. I don't know. You know, Moses.
I don't know. You can, you know. Yeah, you part the seas. You could have a burning bush.
Except,
you throw
no, you don't part the seas. You let them back. You know, you just let them.
Well, you
go.
Part them and
you
then
crush
you, and then you crush guys.
Well,
into
then,
right,
yeah, you turn them into acid or something.
The red is from blood.
Ah, man,
like
plagues could be unleashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You unlock them.
Well, it's like Bioshock. The plague of locusts comes out of your arm. You know, it's pretty sweet. Moses has some plasmids.
That's happening soon. I
probably
think. Yeah. So
yeah,
that's the Moses.
The Moses, yeah.
Moses the Redemption.
The Reckoning.
The Reckoning.
Well,
we got off on this stuff way too much, apparently.
Yeah.
Here's what's bullshit. Derp, 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 derp. Unfortunately, it
is bullshit.
It's always
true, though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not far off from what
Moses is public domain.
Yeah, they could do it.
Anne of Green Gables. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was really what I was thinking when they were talking about Jack the Ripper, because I'm like, he killed what, like five guys or five women,
yeah.
You know, and I'm like, how the hell are they going to do, like, are you going to be him and just kill five people? Visceral Games would never do that. Are you, you know, going to be the guy who chases him,
except
Jack the Ripper has like lackeys that you have to just kill constantly
That's
all the time. That's
they all have sort of like nails through them and stuff.
It's condemned.
Right. But it's just like, once you get this far away from anything resembling, why do you even even that's what I don't understand. Why
because
you
people
even
will be
bother?
Like, oh, did you hear they made a Jack the Ripper game? But this time, he's got crazy smoke hands and stuff, probably.
Yeah.
He probably shoots crazy smoke effects that look like the medic thing from Team Fortress, but they're white, and they turn someone into a dust ghost. Yeah. I mean, you know. And people have nails sticking out of them, guaranteed.
Yeah,
he's basically. And at the end of the game, you realize that you're actually living in the present, controlling Jack the Ripper
in virtual reality.
Yeah, his unknown grandchild or great great grandchild.
Yeah.
I wonder if this stuff is at all a response to Assassin's Creed. Of like, look at all the crazy press they got from being in the Crusades. Wait a minute, Jack the Ripper. But wait a minute, he's way more. That's shit. So it's cool now.
Yeah. Right.
Yep.
Like, yeah, not just Inferno came from that. I don't know. It probably didn't.
Video games.
Mm.
Just gonna say that between every segment this time. Just sort of video games.
I don't know.
That was a new segment.
Have you guys read From Hell, the Alan Moore book about Jack the Ripper?
I read the first third of it, and then it sort of faded away. It's sitting next to my bed with a bookmark in it.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. I'd recommend it.
I'll finish it.
It's really
probably now that we've had this conversation, I'll finish it.
So so you can see what
get it myself just, psyched like, up for the Ripper.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think they based it on that, so. I don't know. It's really good. Cool. I just wanted an excuse to tell people that. The concept of it is really interesting, just that the idea of, you know, it's a constant argument in sociology and crimes being sort of a product of their society, and the idea of the reason people commit crimes is because they grew up in this environment and then they're exposed to these variables or whatever, and this is the reason why, you know, crime is higher in this area, or why this person who was raised in this family
is stuff that Alan Moore likes.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's an interesting, like, hypothetical way to sort of try to deconstruct the Jack the Ripper thing by being like, what about this time created this person, and like, what were the repercussions, or you know, what was the, like, environment and context? I don't know. It's super interesting. And that I was thinking about it today, and it kind of just made me more bummed about Jack the Ripper, like, ghost demon killer edition. But, you know, whatever. No one's going to put that in a video game.
No.
Let's take a break.
Video games.
Video games.
Yep. Nick looks like he's going to keel over.
I'm not feeling too good.
So you want to talk about
Borderlands.
Sig.
You want to talk about Borderlands?
No, I don't know if I want to talk about Borderlands.
Really?
No.
Just want to say a little bit, just a little bit.
I play Borderlands. Yeah. You know what? People should send in questions about Borderlands.
All right.
And I will answer them.
Questions at idlethumbs.net.
Yeah.
Subject about Borderlands.
I'll talk about Borderlands next week.
Okay. Well, I think there's like a secondary embargo that goes up next week.
Yeah, it'll be a good time to talk about it.
Okay.
The border bargo?
Yeah.
All right, we'll raise that bargo next week.
I haven't gotten that far. I mean, I played 4 or 5 hours, so I don't want to talk about it yet.
I don't know, 4 or 5 hours for a game that's not even out yet. That seems like
you know,
that's beyond. All right,
I'll defer to you, to your expertise.
Yeah,
on that one. I did want to mention Monkey Island, the Tale of Monkey Island.
Yeah,
we usually don't talk about.
You want to mention
Telltale
the Tales
stuff.
Of Monkey Island?
Well, you know, the Tales. Yeah. That's what I call it. You know, because Jake's on this podcast, obviously, but I did, and he works at Telltale Games and was a co-director on Tales of Monkey Island 3, Episode 3.
I was.
Whatever that one is called, Lair of the Leviathan.
It's Lair of the Leviathan.
Yeah. Anyway, I just wanted to bring it up because I'm enjoying the series. I'm playing the, you know, playing them as they come out. And I think that it's been interesting to play through because all the Telltale stuff, for the most part, it's been like fairly traditional adventure format stuff, which is fine. It is. But the thing that I find most interesting about it is what it is. But the thing that's interesting about Tales of Monkey Island is that you guys are, with every episode, it seems like trying to incorporate some kind of puzzle that has its own actually unique design mechanic for that episode, which is something that I don't
like. I know in the third one there's the face off stuff and the. And the language translation stuff.
Right.
What are you
like
talking
in the
about?
Early ones, there's stuff like the map hunt, which was kind of aggravating in a lot of cases. But I mean, I appreciate that it's not like every single puzzle in the game isn't just, you know, I've got this item in my inventory and there's this item on the in the environment and I'm going to put this one on that and then the puzzle keeps going. I don't know. It's been interesting. I feel like one of the problems with a lot of adventure games in the modern era, so to speak, is that they've actually forgotten that at one point adventure games were more progressive. I mean, adventure games have never been a gameplay dominated genre compared to most other genres.
Right.
But they also didn't used to be static.
Right.
Where it was always assumed that every game was just going to work the exact same way.
A lot of that stuff of just give this item to this person or combine this item with this item and then put it in this hole is in a lot of the older stuff, or at least sort of like the golden age adventure game stuff, that was more almost like, I wouldn't necessarily say filler puzzles, but it was sort of the connective tissue between narrative events and between sort of the more systemized stuff. And I mean, I think that we're trying to do some things that are kind of progressive in Tales of Monkey Island, but one of the systemized stuff, or like the sort of attempt at sort of at least having sort of a hint of a systemized puzzle, is more deliberately a callback to the old Monkey Island games than it is trying to move super forward. I mean, I think some of the puzzles that we're doing are things that you couldn't do in the 90s necessarily, just because, I don't know, or it would be expensive. But like, I think people forget that like Monkey Island 1 had a monetary system, and forget how sort of systemized insult sword fighting is, and some of the exploration based stuff you do on Monkey Island, and or like the navigator head and the map systems and stuff in those games. You remember insult sword fighting as a thing, but it seems like what you mostly remember is you talk to people until you unlock a branch, or you combine an inventory item with a thing to move the story forward. But
yeah, but you're
actually spending a lot of time building up an arsenal or systems. And also it just mixes up the gameplay in a way that isn't mixed up when you don't have that stuff. I'm glad.
No, it's just, and you're totally right about it being sort of more almost a throwback, or not necessarily a throwback, but sort of a, like being informed by the older games. But it's, I guess, the thing that I think is cool about that is that there was a time when adventure games did feel more novel. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you look at the difference between something like Maniac Mansion 1, Monkey Island, Day of the Tentacle, and like Grim Fandango, those are all from the same company, and they play remarkably differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like those are very, very different games.
Right.
They both have a lot of just basic A plus B equals C puzzles, but the overall way of interacting with the world and sort of style of what you're doing in the world is actually very different.
Well, like Maniac Mansion has like the real time house stuff, right? Or et cetera.
And then, you know, Day of the Tentacle obviously has the whole seamless sort of like back and forth between three times,
multi planes of time existing at the same time.
The Monkey Island games did a lot of cool stuff with structure and like sort of just a large world that you were. Mm-hmm. Sort of divided up in an interesting way, and as you said, some of those systems, especially Monkey Island 1, and you know, I feel like that's been something that's really been lacking from the genre. So yeah, good job on you guys sort of trying to sneak some of that stuff in.
I mean,
there.
Yeah, it's not sneaking it. It's a pretty deliberate goal.
Sure.
I don't know how successful we are point to point, but I'm glad that you're at least noticing it.
Yeah, not to just like plug my, you know, co-hosts.
So what
like
you're saying is here. Buy Tales of Monkey Island.
But yeah, no, I've been enjoying it, and I didn't know like how, you know, appropriate it was to talk about it on this podcast, but I don't know, I think it's fine.
I will accept your enjoyment of a part of a game that I worked on.
Thanks.
Yeah,
good job.
Nick is silent, so I'm assuming that you're over there vomiting.
No, I actually did.
You don't need to say anything, Nick.
Oh, okay. I played your episode.
I read your preview of episode one on Shaq News.
I went back and played two. No,
we don't need to talk.
We don't
about
need to talk
this.
About. Okay. I did enjoy the latest episode.
But thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah, no problem.
I don't know. It's weird to talk about on this podcast.
Yeah.
Well,
it's been a year. That's our anniversary gift to you.
So from
Jake.
Now on, we're just going to talk about Telltale games.
On our anniversaries.
On our anniversaries. Once a year.
Yeah, get ready. Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
All right. Well, should we take a break, figure out some reader mail?
Yeah.
Okay.
Video game.
Time for some reader mail. All right. Ryan Z. Bone writes, "Yo, Thumbs, I was talking with my creative writing major friend today, and I thought of something. Wouldn't it be interesting to explore setting as a character in a game? My friend thought the setting would need an intelligence attributed to it to be a character, and I immediately thought of Portal. But I don't think intelligence is necessary. It'd be an interesting thing to explore a world and learn about it and its past just by examining stuff.
Missed.
I guess what I want is a smaller, highly detailed area to explore and learn about, rather than a huge fucking world to drive around in. Anyway, what do you guys think? Keep casting those pods, Ryan Bone." Yeah, I mean, I think...
That is a thing that I would like.
Like, I love when games do that.
where it's just
like BioShock. I mean, Myst is a decent example. Mm-hmm. Like Last Express, we've talked about
all the density of a regular game compressed down into a small game.
Yeah, where the setting is hugely important as opposed to just a backdrop.
The density of you know what I mean,
right? Yep. Like, will you learn anything interesting about Victorian London by playing The Ripper? Probably not. But you could make probably a sweet Jack the Ripper game where that was the case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I personally love when games do that. I mean, I usually prefer that hugely over games where the narrative is really focused around like a particular character, or like you have to kill this warlord or whatever. I mean, right. I love when character-driven games are focused around the environment.
I mean, I think he's talking about stuff even sort of more, at least when even more detailed than than what other, but
I mean, ODST kind of tries to do that, but it sort of does it in like a very shortcutty way,
right,
where they just show your character inferring those things instead of you, the player, actually inferring anything. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't really count at all, but that's the structure that I guess we're going for.
Right.
Yeah, I like stuff like that, though. I think games are really well equipped to do that theoretically, but you actually have to have an interesting setting for that to work.
Especially first-person ones.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Generally.
Yeah.
Where your eyes and hands are the same object, basically.
Right.
Unless there's a gun in your hand.
There usually is.
Yeah. And in your eye.
God, that'd be crazy.
Gun eye.
Like first person laser vision.
Yeah. Blink to fire.
Has that ever happened?
Blink to fire. Just whenever your eyes are open.
Yeah, Natal will do that.
Oh, God. Jake just mimed blinking. Didn't come through in the audio.
But
recording.
Lasers were coming out of my eyes every time they opened.
Yeah, it was amazing.
It was crazy. Because we've got a Project Natal dev kit here at Idle Thumbs.
Right, of course. We weren't included in the press release when they said which publishers are getting on board, but I think that was just an oversight. So
yeah, basically, we have a weirdly traumatized Milo running during all these episodes. He just watches us make these casts. Yep.
He's our AI director.
Yeah.
All right.
Talk about Borderlands next week, Milo.
I want it now. David Cole writes, achievements gone wrong. I just caught up with the rest of the world and bought a 360. As a big Thumbs fan, one of the first titles I picked up was Far Cry 2. Now, the whole concept of a console-wide achievement system was brand new to me, but this really seemed wrong. My best buddy died in a firefight after saving my life. I tried desperately to revive him, but he'd lost too much blood. He died in my arms, and I gently closed his eyes. Achievement unlocked. Good night, sweet prince, appeared on the screen, pulling me out of the moment completely. Whether achievements are good for games like Team Fortress 2 is arguable, but this is obviously bad, right? I agree
with
him.
Don't look at me. I hate all achievements.
Okay.
I'm Nick the king of hating achievements.
I don't mind achievement systems, but I do wish that in a game like this where I don't want that sort of thing popping up, I mean, can you turn that stuff off? Or is it just, you
probably
can choose what
not.
Corner of the screen
I've
it shows
never
up
heard
on,
of an
I think.
Option
oh, no, it's developers who can choose that.
maybe you can, and we're dead, idiots, but
yeah.
I don't.
In general, even aside from the notification, I think that stuff is pretty goofy. Yeah. I mean, it does the exact opposite thing games, I think, could be trying to do more, which is make you care because you care,
right,
not because the game tells you care.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, this is exactly why we have shit like, you know, in Red Faction Guerrilla, it's hilarious, but in a lot of other games, it's just stupid. And this is the reason why. It's because the game doesn't need you to care about anything. It only has to tell you your character cares about it.
The achievement popping up is sort of like you are seeing through the Matrix and suddenly behind Far Cry 2, it's actually just Joust or something like that. Like,
yeah,
what
right.
points?
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Oh. High score.
Yeah.
Yep. It's awful.
Also, apparently this is a game where you close the eyes of someone who dies.
Yeah.
So take that guy from 2 weeks ago. Or
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Far Cry 2.
Yeah. It is the future of games.
Yeah. Close his eyes and he stops shooting.
I don't mind achievements, but yeah, I don't like when their presentation layer jumps in front of the part of the game that I actually care about.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, your belief was, or your disbelief apparently was suspended.
Right.
Boop-doop.
Yep.
What?
Ding.
What?
I have a weird thing about achievements where sometimes I'll get sucked into them,
mm-hmm.
and I'll start doing this idiotic, meaningless task until I get the little message that says I completed this
right.
arbitrary measure of things. But then I look back and I'm like, that was a complete waste of time. I just spent longer on this game for no reason.
It's
it didn't
weird,
add anything to the experience.
I have that.
And yet I felt compelled to do it at the time. It's like the worst of both worlds.
I have that gene. I mean, like when I can become obsessed over
the completionist
finding loot,
gene. Yeah.
But it's achievements have never done that to me.
Huh.
It's just I'm impervious to them.
That's cool. That's nice.
I find no use for them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite kind of achievements are the ones that you get just for doing a cool thing.
Right.
And not for...
I would much rather they be reflected in-game with, you've unlocked a Beatles video, or you have a new level to look at, or something like that. I think, you know, just like, I don't need the overarching like gamer score
the ones
thing.
The ones that are the most frustrating to me are the linear progression achievements. Those are the ones that I wish wouldn't pop up.
Oh, yeah.
Of, right. Like,
oh, yeah, you've reached
out to you're going to have a buddy who dies, whatever. Good night, sweet prince. Or, like, whatever, yeah, like the Beatles ones.
Well, you don't necessarily get that.
I guess, okay.
But you mean the ones where it's like, you beat level two.
Just any time that it's tied to a narrative beat is frustrating
to me. Oh, okay,
just
in general.
Just like...
Whether or not it's completion.
Yeah, just don't... I achieved playing through this. I mean... Yeah.
You're a winner.
Like, yeah. We're all winners. I'm probably, again, not allowed to talk about that because I work at an adventure game company whose Xbox games just are like Act 2 achievement, badink. So, well, you know,
it's
what you do. But those are frustrating to me.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like when you're playing Trials or something like that, it's just
There are some
crazy equals you achieve something weird.
There are some games that are, you know, where achievements and that game are a match made in heaven. I mean, there are some games where achievements are great.
Like an arcade game on Xbox Live Arcade.
Exactly. But there are a lot of games where, you know, they...
I'd rather see a leaderboard in that instance.
Well, they have those, too.
I know. But why do you need the achievement?
I don't know.
Well, because there are games... I mean, like Trials, for example. I mean, there are times when it's like you pulled off this crazy thing. And to me... In the spirit and atmosphere of that game,
the developer recognizes that yes, you in fact made 3 million explosions, and your guy like bounced off every wall in the level or whatever it is. Like, sweet,
I like that stuff. It gets to the heart of kind of what a certain type of enjoyment from that game is.
I guess I don't see why that just can't be done in the game and not with an arbitrary score that's assigned to your username. You know what I mean? I don't ever like browse other people's gamer scores. Like I don't feel like that's useful at all. I don't know why they can't just bring up a screen.
Unfortunately, like, for you, a lot of people love that stuff.
I know. We're done talking about it, but I've never understood it mentally. I can't bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I certainly can't care about that because most of the stuff I play is on PC. And so, Red Faction Guerrilla has, I've noticed I was getting achievements for that. And it Batman
has, it
also.
Has, it has Steam achievements.
Well, Steam achievements are one thing, but it also has games for Windows Live.
Games Windows. Yeah.
Yeah. Usually games don't have both of those. They'll have one or the other.
Should have both. But, it's like double the value.
Yeah. But I don't think Steam achievements.
it's a Steam achievement.
I don't think Steam achievements actually contribute to any persistent score, do they? They're just game specific.
I thought people had like a Steam rank, but I don't know.
Yeah, but that's just how many hours of a week you play per week of games in general.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, you can compare them against particular friends, but you don't go in there and have like my Steam score is 6,000.
Right, you don't have a Steamer card.
Right. Steamer card. Yeah. So anyway, there's some opinions about those things. What else do we have here? Brian Grist has a wacky image that I'll try to remember put up on the website where he writes, I was in a local bookstore the other day browsing the science fiction section when I ran across this notice in the attached image. It is a card hanging off the shelf usually used to recommend similar authors. Of course, I immediately thought of Idle Thumbs. And the plaque is Use of Weapons by Ian M. Banks. This book will blow your head clean off your body.
So I thought it was going to be a wizard-related thing.
No. Definitely, they're one-upping IGN.
Local bookstore.
Yeah.
.com.
Yep. Scoo is a time wizard, apparently. He says, hey again, guys. This is an update from the past. I'm the guy who started back from episode 1. I just got done listening to Conf Grenade 4, the one with the weird crackling sound throughout. Thanks for that.
I've
been through 3 pairs of headphones so far. You guys just invested in some of those earplug style ones. Anyway, so he goes on about this for a while. It's really long about his experience on the London Tube. Obligatory Cock Foster's name drop goes here, he says. Anyway, he goes on and he has an actual question. He says, the main reason I wanted to email you guys is to make a gaming confession. I'd also like to hear yours. My confession is that I've never played any of the Katamari games, none of them. I haven't even seen someone playing them. For some reason, I've gone out of my way to avoid contact with that series. The more I went longer without playing them, the more it seemed like I missed the wave. He keeps going for a while. He says, am I going to miss out on things if I don't play them in order? Am I too late to revel in what seems like a gloriously insane game? So he's got 2 questions, I guess. He wants to know, which Katamari game he should play, and he wants to know what our missing links are, I guess.
Just play the original.
Yeah, for Katamari,
just play the original.
In order of, yeah, my recommendations go in order of their release. Play the first one if you can't get a hold of that, maybe because you're in Europe, and I don't know if that first one ever actually came out for PS2.
I think it was late.
But yeah. We Love Katamari is probably the second best one, and then I think after that, Kaito Takahashi
don't
didn't make
bother.
Them.
And yeah,
you
didn't
shouldn't
work
just
on
play
them anymore.
Yeah. Get the first one.
The first one. That was the only one I completed.
The second Katamari one, I think, game, is also really good, though.
It is really good, but I definitely had that thing where, you know, I'd play the first game, and it was this mind-blowing, surprising, awesome thing. Mm-hmm. And then I played the second one, and I'm like, this is still really fun, but
I've
I don't
heard
know.
People
the whole
who
point
got
of,
into
the
it
whole
after
point
the
of
fact
for me was
the preferences towards the second one. But if you just want the coolness of experiencing rolling things up and getting bigger, and then you roll up the entire world, that's the first one, pretty much, from start to finish.
Yeah,
the first one's really good. We're not missing out.
It's an awesome game.
Yeah.
Yeah. In terms of gaming shame confessions, I've still not gotten past the first screen of Metal Gear Solid 1.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
I would love to get through all those games, but I'm so shit at that fucking first screen. It makes me feel like the most inept person in the world.
Yeah.
I remember you and I tried to play through it once, and we felt like the
most
idiotic idiots.
Yeah.
And then you at some point were like, yeah, my friend who plays it all the time showed me, and it's not that hard, and I got through all the games. We played through the whole trilogy this week. I was like, you what?
Yeah.
Once I got past the first scene in Metal Gear Solid, I burned through those games.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Actually, for me, it wasn't just the first screen, although I had trouble there, but the first, like, 40 minutes of that game, like up to the DARPA chief.
Uh-huh.
And then
I love that, by the way, the DARPA chief. I love that everyone knows
Donald
Anderson. Yeah, the DARPA chief.
Yeah, like why the fuck do I know that? But
well, it's just such a goofy title. Yeah. It's like, does it say that on his business cards? The DARPA chief. Like I love that. It's such a video gamey name for someone.
Metal Gear Solid has good names.
Yeah. I mean, Metal Gear Solid, I was actually comparing Metal Gear Solid Story to Red Faction Guerrilla at times, where, like, none of the characters in the world of Metal Gear Solid will ever admit that anything hilarious or goofy is going on, but clearly Kojima knows at times there are, and he will wink to the player. The difference is
as
he goes...
Psycho Mantis.
Right. Yeah, exactly. They're a little more ridiculous about it than Red Faction, but...
Yeah.
They did kind of remind me of that similar thing. Anyway, you first 40 minutes until DARPA Chief...
Well, I just I've played that maybe, you know, 10 times.
Wait, have you not gotten past it still?
No. I got past it once, and that was
the time you beat the game.
The rest of the game,
right?
Once.
Sweet.
So
apparently, we suck at Metal Gear.
Yeah.
That's one of those games that some people are just like, "What? This is stupid." It's like a movie.
Yeah.
And then for me, it's like, can't. There's a guy.
Well, I remember it being really weird because I played the beginning so many times that it became really familiar. Like that was like a whole other game. And then after I got past that point and came back to that,
new Metal Gear.
I was like, wow, there's all this other stuff. And then I would come back to the original location and it would be like home. Like, oh, wow, I'm back here.
That's what, that's what Full Throttle's like.
There's other
for me.
Stuff past that door on
where,
the
like,
right.
The kickstand is.
Yeah. Like, I've played Full Throttle all the way through probably two or three times, maybe two times.
Mm-hmm.
But I've played the first like half hour of that game a thousand times. Also, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, it's like that as well. I've played the beginning of that game a million.
Yeah,
and
the first act of
Grim
Fandango.
Oh, really?
Well, because the second one is ridiculous, so.
Yeah, right. That's true. And it's not because they're hard games in those cases.
Yeah.
It's just they're games that I love so much that every like year or so I'm like, I should load that up and play it, and then I'll play through it for like half an hour and be like, that was really cool. Anyway, I'm gonna go
have
dinner.
I sometimes do that with books where I'll just restart a book that I like, and then you get like a quarter of the way through, it's like, oh yeah, all right,
I get it. Yeah, right.
That feeling has returned. All right.
I
probably have a lot of nasty confessions. I probably just games that I've played maybe for an hour and just never played anymore.
Oh, like, I have a lot like that, I'm
like,
sure.
Yeah. I've never completed like Deus Ex or Thief, which are fairly large holes.
I forget if I completed Thief. I definitely played Thief and loved it when it came out.
I loved it, but
it blew my mind.
I probably loved it for a day, and I don't think I played a whole lot of it.
Deus Ex is another one. It's a game that I was really into when I was playing it, but I only got a few hours in and then just never picked it up again. It just sort of faded out.
I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. And then just,
This is the kind of segment that causes people
I'm sure they're just like, you what? You don't even know what a game is now.
Dump fuck these guys. Unsubscribe. Yeah.
Steve,
I've never played
Duncan
an Ultima game.
Like,
never played an Ultima game.
That was the one I was going to say, actually, was Ultima. I've never played any Ultima game.
I just read,
none
I was reading
have played an Ultima game.
Yeah.
Let's just cancel this podcast. We need to stop. Next email.
Mario.
Never played. I feel like a lot
never owned a game console.
This episode, this might have
this
to be.
This is a shameful, shameful. All right, well, like I asked, and we're saying all these things, but we've played every other game other than the ones we've just
well,
named.
Well, it's funny. I've played a fucking lot of games. Like, I mean, it's, right. you know, it's, games are hard like that. But, it's like, yeah. there are so many games, and they take so long yeah. that it's like if you're gaming sort of history and the way you grew up playing games is just a few degrees different from someone else's. Right. It's amazing what yeah. a huge
you
difference.
You may have just missed this giant chunk of what is yeah. now an essential thing.
Like, I yeah. wasn't even really aware of Ultima until years after it was mm-hmm. relevant.
Right. Same.
I was reading.
But the thing that I, the, okay. the, oh, just the reason for me, Ultima is one of those. Like, I don't. I feel like a lot of the early Garriott Ultimas probably are not that necessary. I think they're more important, but probably not things that. Are as in line with yeah. necessarily what I feel like I need to play. The one that really kills me always is Ultima Underworld, because mm. that came out when I was playing PC games, you know, and in a lot.
And you just
and
passed
it's by. One of those yeah, and it's one of those ones where everyone from Looking Glass, which is a studio whose games I absolutely adore, Looking Glass, and that you know, which came from a lot of Origin stuff right. to begin with, and they made Ultima Underworld, but like all those guys who later spread out. To all these really interesting studios, you know, Irrational, even Harmonix, like Ion Storm, all these studios whose work I find incredible and interesting and fascinating and like really important. Whenever you read about the games that influenced them, they're always like, yeah, man, Ultima Underworld, that game blew my mind.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe what was going on in this first person crazy thing. And that is the like the one of those very few games that I still haven't actually gone back and played. That I still am bummed that I wasn't on that wave when it was there, mm-hmm. when my mind would have been most extremely blown.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Yeah. There are,
that one bums me out.
There are games that I heard about that were, you know, got hype or were talking about as good, but I didn't follow games well enough. And yeah. now at this point, since I work in games or talk about games or write about games, it's just expected that I somehow, when I was
have like magically
when I was,
been
when
in
I
the
was
right
13,
place.
I had the best taste in the world. Yeah, and knew every yeah. game that was going to actually change the world. And I mean, I've gone and backfilled a lot of stuff, but there's still plenty that I haven't ever hit.
Yeah, yeah.
And that is, I think a decent number of people have that yeah. degree of shame, but yep. it's just always with different titles and different people. So there's always something you can be scandalized about
yeah.
that someone
no,
hasn't
exactly.
played.
It's impossible to, yeah. There's so much stuff to play. I made a really concerted effort in like the, you know, early mid 2000s to really catch myself up on console.
When
and I think I did. Yeah. Well, a little before, I mean,
like right before
when that. I was hired at Shack, it was as console editor. And it was mm-hmm. in the years leading up to that, that I sort of gained the fluency with console gaming history to the point where I could be a console editor and be credible about it. But like, I basically had to sort of give myself this weird history lesson in console games where I went back and played tons of old stuff. I bought a bunch of old consoles. I tracked down all these games. It was kind of cool. It was interesting, but it's fucking hard as hell and really time consuming because games are long.
Yeah.
Yep.
And there's a lot of them. And yeah, if you don't, you know, if you didn't just happen to play the exact right thing when you're growing up, it's like, how do you know that was supposed to be the thing?
Right.
It's not like movies where it's really easy to just rent like a bunch of Fellini films or like catch yourself up on Kubrick or whatever, Hitchcock, and fill in the gaps. Like, that's super easy.
Right.
Really hard to do that with games. On that note, I guess someone else writes an email, says,
why didn't you guys play Ultima? What?
Patekmo or something writes, dear Thumbs, I decided to ask a real question. My question is, what are your favorite retro games? You guys have mentioned a few older games before, but I wanted to know what your favorites are. Also, please include a few obscure retro games if you know any. I personally am a retro game fan and have played many retro games and go as far to listen to 2 retro podcasts. All right.
What's considered retro these days?
I don't know. I mean, probably like early 90s. Is that...
Is that retro enough? I don't know.
Like anything that isn't 3D,
I mean, I don't think
at
like,
this point?
Yeah,
I mean,
SNES wow. era and earlier? I don't know.
I mean, or
that makes
or
me feel old.
Or, well, yeah, but
like,
I mean,
true, though, it's true.
Like, I mean, are you looking
games
for,
become
like,
retro way faster than most things because the technology scales up.
But I mean, yeah, that's it. Are we supposed to be talking about like a Vectrex thing or something? I mean,
yeah, I know. That's why
yeah.
the way
I mean,
you
maybe,
said retro
yeah.
a thousand times. I was,
like retro computing, like Commodore 64 style? Or
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, take it however you want. Do you have any?
There are so many games.
I know.
Once again, I had a crap load of games on like my Apple II and my Atari and my NES, but...
What are some really obscure ones?
I don't know.
They were obscure.
I have memories of a lot of stupid games that I enjoyed playing on like my 2GS.
Right.
But they're all just like, they all sort of blend together in my brain at this point, unfortunately. They're all just 3.5-inch discs that I picked up at the local Apple users group right. and then brought home and put on my computer and played for a little while and said, oh, this is a crazy karate game, or this is a Spy Hunter ripoff, or whatever, you know?
Do they still have, like, computer conventions, like how they used to have, where people would just sell?
I don't know.
Do you know what I'm talking about when I say that?
Yeah, I went to a couple of those. Bought weird software.
That's where I got PC games back in the day occasionally. Mm. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know. We're dumb, apparently. We hate games.
I will say, I don't know if this is
that's not true.
Old enough. I think it's 92 or something. I don't
know. This is Sony PlayStation.
And it's not, two. It's not that obscure, but a lot of people haven't played it. Star Control 2. That game is amazing.
A bunch of people at work told me they brought up Star Control 2 again recently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I've mentioned it, I think, probably a couple times over the last year.
Yeah.
But it's a really amazing game. It was pretty ahead of its time. It's one of the, it's probably one of the precursors to the 4X genre.
Yeah.
Whatever those all are. Exterminate, explore, exploit.
Extreme.
Extreme. Yeah, I don't know. What are those games in space where you do a lot of things?
Yeah.
Master of Orion and you know, Galactic Civilizations and stuff like that. But Star Control 2 is kind of like that, but it's like an early example of it, and it's super, super cool and really cool. It's got a cool sense of just lighthearted sense of humor, kind of a, I don't know, almost a whimsical quality to the alien design and all the ships and everything. It's great, awesome game. And there's a freeware port supported by the original developer called the Urquan Masters. Anyway, it's cool. Fun. Good game. Old game. It's fun.
Good old games.
Good old game. I don't know. Castles 2. Also previously discussed on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back. I don't know.
The old Duke Nukem side-scroller games. I liked those back in the day.
Yeah. I mean, is that stuff? I guess that stuff is retro.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
That's the thing. I have to adjust
my brain to
think
of PC, when I think of PC gaming and retro, my brain is always like pre... When, like, PC shareware developers saw Super Mario Brothers.
Right. Like Elite and stuff like that. Elite is like 25 years old or something now.
Mm.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Mule. That's actually one I've never played. I've never played Mule.
Yeah.
That's one of those ones that for the longest time was on. It's probably past the era now where everyone cites it as an influence. But there was definitely, like, growing up reading PC game magazines like PC Gamer and CGW, Mule is one of those games where you'd see it mentioned all the time as a big influence. The whole Chris Crawford era of game design.
Right.
When PC games were trying to model all these really crazy systems.
Yeah.
I won a drawing in my junior high to be vice principal for the day. And I had seen the computer that my vice principal had in his office. And it was a CGA. It had a CGA display.
Was CGA 16 colors?
CGA. No, EGA four. Is 16. CGA is the four.
Four
one.
Color.
Like the,
okay.
I think there's a couple
of
variants where it's like,
stuff. Yeah.
Where it's like black, white, purple, and light blue, I think. Or there was an alternate palette. But the only CGA game that I remembered having at that point was Star Goose. So I just brought it in on a 5 1/4-inch floppy and installed it on his computer when I was in his office, because the deal was that he had to go to my classes for that day. And I had to sit in his office and, like, make announcements. It was a weird, amazing thing.
That's awesome.
That's pretty great.
Except that the principal didn't think that it was all fun and games, so he, like, tried to make me discipline a student at one point.
Oh, God.
And I said, forget this, and just walked out of the room.
Shame him.
I'm going to go play Star Goose. So that's what happened on that day.
That's pretty awesome. Instead of disciplining one of your fellow students, you just went into a room and played Star Goose.
And played a shareware CGA game. I thought his computer was running Windows 3.0. No, Windows 1.0, which was amazing, because it was like the Windows 3.1 era about when I was in junior high. So that dates me, for anyone who wants to know about how old I am, which probably makes you think I'm either old or young. But Windows 1.0, I didn't know that anyone had ever actually used that.
Yeah.
It basically just looked like DOS shell, but drawn in graphics mode instead of text mode. It was garbage. It couldn't run Star Goose. I had to boot into DOS.
Did you have a boot disk?
No, you just used to be able to quit Windows and it would go to DOS back in the day. Up till XP, right? I think XP was the first one that wasn't technically running on top of DOS.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Even up to 98.
Could, 95 and 98, you could just boot it into DOS. And then at some point, win.exe was run in your auto exit.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, PCs.
Yep. Man, I remember switching from DOS to Windows, and it was a huge, it was like a tectonic shift. Because I remember I had gained all this fluency in DOS of like starting up the MSCDEX.exe for like mouse drivers or whatever the hell that was
for CD-ROM.
CD-ROM, right, exactly. When I got a CD-ROM drive and all like setting up all those goddamn
where you're configuring
files
HiMEM
HiMEM, yeah, exactly.
I forget what the other MEM is.
All that shit. And then I remember going to Windows and not knowing how to get to anything.
Right.
Like, you couldn't just type a thing in. And
That was the moment when I, like, eclipsed you in computer knowledge. Because I wouldn't know how to use DOS if I was hit in the face with it, but
If someone hit you in the face with DOS, you probably still would not know.
But you'll, like, go swimming in the registry.
Right. And, yeah.
The Windows registry still freaks me the fuck out. I hate that thing.
Yeah, me too. I don't like it.
Horrible, stupid idea.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Piece of shit.
I really fucked up my registry recently. It was kind of hilarious.
Oh, is that what your thing? Is that how you solved a thing? Recently Nick had some problem with a bunch of PC games. No.
That was completely different.
What was that? What happened?
Because
we were talking on Steam, and Nick was like, yeah, I don't know what's going on. I can't get Batman to start up, or like some other game, too.
Sounds like
and
a then, 10. It won't start.
I can't get the Batman.
The power on, Batman. Can't power
and then all
on
of a
Batman.
Sudden, he's like, oh, I fixed it. All my games work now. And I'm like, what'd you do? Yeah. And he's like, I'm going to save it for the podcast. And I'm like, there's no way this could be interesting enough to talk about on a podcast. So now I want to know what the hell you did to make all the games work.
I disabled HiMEM.sys.
What did you do?
Updated my graphics drivers.
Nice one. All right.
Yes.
I was worth waiting like a month for
video game.
I remember my wanting to just commit suicide because I went from having an Apple IIgs to having a Macintosh to then getting a Windows PC at some point. And just my mind was completely blown by how horrible it was that like you installed something and it was like the PC equivalent of like in a movie when you see someone commit suicide and you just see the blood and brain splat just appear on the wall suddenly. Yeah. And that's how I felt every installer on a PC was, where it's like...
You didn't feel like a guy getting shot. You felt like the blood and brain spat on the wall in a movie?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it wasn't me, but it was like, I press install, and then if my PC is that blank, pristine wall, then it's just like, boom, guts and brains everywhere. You're never putting that back together. Right. Like, once you've installed one application on any Windows machine, you're fucked forever. You're never going to 100% remove that.
Yeah.
That is garbage to me, and it's still... Sorry. Why am I even talking about this? Games still insist on just barfing shit all over the place. For a while, they had ATI, like, Rage 128 mobility
right.
or something.
Yes, yes, they did. I remember that. Yeah.
It can kind of run Quake 3.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
God.
It was demoed on a Mac, right?
Yeah.
In Macworld. Yeah.
Version of any card is complete shit. Complete bullshit. That's the most deceptive... It seriously should be fucking illegal. When they say, like, you've got, you know, no, I mean, really, when they say you've got a GeForce or whatever in this laptop,
right.
but it's got the little Go or, like, mobility version right. of it, fucking bullshit. That card can't do shit. That card blows my asshole. Like, I fucking hate that.
So you want to read another reader?
That amount answers this retro
game. Yeah, I don't know
question.
If any of that's going in the podcast. I don't know.
I don't know. We could just put a blast at the end. Da, 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 da. This is the Alathumb's curmudgeon-y old asshole blast. I hate Windows. I hate mobility graphics card. I hate updating my graphics driver. AutoExec.bat. HiMEM.sys.
Oh, I'm going to hurl.
Because we're all just like,
AutoExec.bat.
It's just, if that's a mobility card, it's fucking blow my asshole. Windows, just like a gunshot to the head, all that bullshit DLLs everywhere. It's like when I'm installing a game, it's like there's just brain on my wall. I wish.
Why doesn't Microsoft fucking.
Why don't they just twist those guys
up?
Why don't
they just. Yeah.
Derp a derp a derp a derp. We're all assholes. Yeah. I didn't play Ultima. Fuck you, but I'm still an old curmudgeon-y bitch.
Oh, man. Yeah. How did the end of this podcast just... I could see it happening, too. I could see it. There was a silence, which where we would normally end the podcast.
That actually was the silence when the truck just sort of...
I know. Yeah, exactly. It
just
was.
The wheels have sort of
it
been
was.
Spinning as the dust sort of...
I watched
the
it.
As,
just,
it then, as it plows into the
right.
fuel tank.
Well, no, it's just us in slow motion going off the world's longest cliff, and just now it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Registry.
Blow out my ass. Oh, fuck. It's just us, the three of us, as curmudgeonly old men, not noticing that we're sailing off a cliff to our
fists
death.
Out the window.
Right. Yeah, right. Why isn't it a .app OS 10 version of the game? Why does my graphics driver re-update itself automatically? And then we exploded in a big pile of feces, flaming turds.
Video game.
Here's another email. Hey, Chris, Nick, and Games. I recently watched a TV show about games called Gameswipe on BBC4. Although I'd like to claim it as my own observation, a sitcom writer called Graham Linehan said he thought computer games were fascinating because every facet of them is improving apart from the storytelling. His theory on this was that game writers had stopped reading books and their only inspiration came from films. He cited GTA Vice City as a classic example of this. Although I think Vice City is a bad example, as it's essentially a spoof of Scarface, Miami Vice, etc. Working in the games industry, do you think this is the case, and do you think it's a valid observation? Why can't video games riff off films? Should books always be the source of material for other media?
I saw Gameswipe, and I saw that segment. I think storytelling in games is definitely maturing infinitely slower than, maybe not infinitely, but very measurably slower than everything else, but especially in the commercial space. But I think people are doing interesting things with narrative in games that they weren't doing 20 years ago. So
yeah, that's true.
I thought that that argument kind of came... I mean, it came from a guy who blatantly plays games and likes tech. It's that's the writer who does the show, The IT Crowd.
Uh-huh.
But it also felt sort of like, hey, why don't games grow up? I'm a writer, and I don't see traditional writing in games. Therefore, there's no narrative exploration happening in games. And also, it seemed like it came from a guy who plays a lot of games, but who plays a lot of games that are AAA console games, and right, then says, why isn't there amazing narrative work occurring in this? So that said, I think it's also a fair point that the people who are working on those games probably are not as, you know, or like the writing in those games does feel like it is basically just, I saw some movies and here's some sweet shit from those. And yeah, or I'm a writer of who can't get work in the films industry, so I'm contract writing this game.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen Gameswipe, but I mean, I guess my take on that would be, I certainly don't see anything wrong with taking influence from film. I guess my main issue is that most games seem to be drawing from the exact same films, and they seem to be using the exact same style of dialogue and like delivery, right, and settings and everything, like premises and.
They're all blockbusters.
It would, yeah, but I mean, it would.
Not all.
I feel like
a lot of them.
All those games are the game equivalent of a blockbuster film as well. So
that's,
I mean,
true.
Sorry, finish your point.
I was just going to say, you know, certainly one of the filmmakers most frequently cribbed from in games is Tarantino,
mm-hmm,
and I think that the thing that sort of bums me out about it is that the game guys are pretty much always. It's been countless times I've been at a preview event or something, and you know, one of the developers on the game will be like, "Yeah, man, we saw, you know, this whatever Kill Bill, or we saw this or that, or whatever Reservoir Dogs, and we thought that was amazing, and could we recreate that? You know, that same atmosphere." And the thing that bums me out about it is that Tarantino, when he made those films, is always working from a much broader array, right, of influences himself. You know, as well as others, whereas you get to the games and usually the guys are drawing from the filmmaker's interpretation of these other things. And as opposed, right, to having that same breadth of,
yep,
I'm sure I'm dumping on a lot of faces inadvertently. I'm sure there are plenty of game developers who have lots of really interesting interests and diverse influences, but it definitely does seem like games are kind of a tier removed in a lot of cases,
right,
where they're cribbing
from the sort of trunk of like cultural origins of all, right, these ideas.
Yep.
Yeah. And it would be nice. And whether or not that's true or not, it would be nice to see games that seem like they're less direct in, right, that, you know, I mean,
go ahead.
No, nothing.
Oh, I was going to say, off your point about these games are blockbusters. I think that's also kind of interesting, just that no one expects Armageddon to have good writing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
That said, people expect it to have competent sort of fun writing, and the sort of game that should be written like Armageddon usually instead tries to be written like a Stranger in a Strange Land or something like that, or like where, you know, someone thinks they're writing like a super sweet sci-fi,
but yeah,
it's like,
right,
you're not writing a fucking Jerry Bruckheimer movie.
Right.
So, right, the novelization of Armageddon.
But then, the video game equivalent of that is, yeah, fuck you, I'll take your stupid mission. Like, also, Bruce Willis never says that in Armageddon either. So I guess, I mean, the writing is just bad.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's...
I don't know.
We might just be in an era right now where the technology is such, it has gotten to the point where we can play the movie. You know what I mean? You know, where you get that, the kid who comes home from the movie and wants to be that guy or play that experience. Yeah. And I feel
you can
like,
basically do that.
Right. Yeah. I don't think before the last decade or so you could really do that. And I wonder if that's just being explored at the moment and hopefully will be less explored later.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, yeah, I don't know.
I think there's an
ebb. I'm depressed that like that Killzone 2 doesn't try to have at least the writing competency of Bad Boys 2.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't really know what stuff like Killzone 2 is shooting for. And honestly, I don't.
I mean, what you were talking about is that it is a game where it's just a bunch of dudes running around blowing shit up all over the place.
Yeah.
Maybe games should try to have stories that are tonally appropriate to that. More. I mean, there's movies that do a great job of that. They're not my favorite movies in the world, but I think that's tonally closer to the experience that players have when playing those games, and then the game on top of that is pretending that it's, you know, going for the same territory as like Solaris or something like that.
Yeah, I don't think it's, I think you're probably exaggerating, but
okay, maybe I mean, am.
I certainly didn't get the sense when playing Killzone 2 that
I guess it's
trying
not trying to be
Solaris,
that, but it's also, I don't know, I guess I don't know what those games are trying to be. They're just trying to be toneless bullshit.
Games have sort of carved out like a weird amount of like, yeah, this sort of thing where it's like, we're going to have an ambitious narrative, but I don't think really people have defined what they actually mean by that. Like, I mean, it's like deep, meaningful narrative that you're going to connect to, but I don't entirely know what when video games try to do that, what exactly they're trying to do. I don't, you know what? Ugh, can I be a horrible asshole and bring up Subject Zero again?
Oh, man.
Is that horrible to do? It kind of relates to the conversation I was having with Jake. We've definitely gotten a lot of feedback about our discussion of Subject Zero last week. A lot of it, people who agree with us and a lot of people who didn't agree with us. I don't know, relatively equal measure, I guess. I can't really tell entirely. I guess my feeling about something like Subject Zero, I think people in some cases, first of all, I don't plan to not play Mass Effect 2 just because of that, in case I accidentally said that or something.
Yeah, I think that reaction was probably slightly exaggerated, but it was extremely off-putting. Like, it definitely, I think, the temperature of the sort of mood lowered when that trailer came out. Of just
hype
like,
for, yeah.
Right, it was, oh, well. Yeah, well.
But I, to try to sort of clarify, I guess, what I mean by this and tie it into this current discussion, I guess what I'm worried about is that, all right, so BioWare has this character. They've got this abrasive character that I probably will find pretty irritating. I guess I'm fine with that theoretically. Like, it's not like you can't have a brash, violent, abrasive character and have it be interesting. But I guess my concern is that, will it be to any purpose? You know what I mean? Is this actually saying anything interesting? Is this, or is it just going to be a character I find annoying? It's one thing, you know, Jake, like you say, you've got the Armageddon, you've got basically stock characters going through this thing. They're basically vessels for you to just sit back, have an enjoyable time where shit blows up and people do things. Once you get into the point where you're actually presenting characters and dialogue that is actually irritating to me, if you're doing that in an interesting way that's causing me to like reflect on something. If I'm watching A Clockwork Orange and you've got this repulsive character who is, you know, a horrible human being, but he's not someone I'd want to just watch in every movie I see, but that movie presents such fascinating challenges to the way I couldn't tell you in a couple sentences what specifically the like definitive point of A Clockwork Orange is, but you can certainly talk a lot about the themes being discussed and what's being considered by that film. And it's certainly one that I think about a lot. And I try to consider what do I think about what this movie's saying about sort of conditioning and society and the idea of sort of doing the right thing for certain reasons or, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We go on forever. I guess my feeling about Subject Zero is, to me, it seems like it's just going to be stupid. It just seems to me like it's going to be a character that went through some experiment or went through some test, just like a million other ones have in a million comic books and a million movies and a million whatever else, and is just going to be abrasive. And I guess I don't have a lot of a lot of expectation that BioWare is actually going to use that in the service of something interesting, as opposed to just say, we're pushing the envelope by having a super extreme hardcore character, which I, you know, is not something I give a shit about in my video games. I don't, you know, it's, I find it more off-putting than anything else. And I, it's not that I inherently cannot tolerate or stomach profanity. We swear up a storm on this podcast.
Right,
it's
not even a character of that type.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I have my doubts as to what end that will be put there. That's all I really meant about Subject Zero, I guess. We'll see. I'm still going to play the game. If BioWare pulls off something amazing, sure. I didn't get that from Mass Effect 1.
I think also, and this is the thing that people might not entirely know about us, but I think at least between you and I would assume you, nothing excites me more than saying that I think something might be dumb and then having to massively eat my hat because it is totally awesome.
Yeah.
Like, I don't complain if something that I thought was stupid is just amazing in real life. Fuck. If Subject Zero is actually like the crazy linchpin of the story secretly and is this amazing character development that says crazy stuff about whatever else they're trying to say in the world of Mass Effect, best. Like, whatever.
That's rad.
All instead of last episode, I said I won't play it. Now I say that I'll buy 10 copies of Mass Effect 2. So take that.
Yeah. I suspect that won't be the case, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know.
I would like it. I'm going to play the game anyway, so, you know, feel free to blow my mind, BioWare.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And this guy also goes on to say, I'm going to be totally self-aggrandizing here.
Chris Ramo is excellent.
On another note, I would like to say I agree with what Chris had to say about Halo Combat. I bought ODST a few days ago. Noting that Chris beat it on Legendary, and considering myself to be a competent Halo player, I beat all the others on Heroic. I put it on Legendary too, but to my eternal shame, I've gone back to Heroic. Anyway, the moral of the story is that Chris Remo's not shit at video games. I know it's shocking to me too. Anyway, thanks for the cast, James Hiller. So there's that. Ha! Sometimes thanks. I'm good at a video game.
Idle Thumbs is over now.
It's over. Thanks for listening to us for a year, those of you who actually have been.
Yep, and this is our final episode. we committed to 1 year, and we have fulfilled that obligation. Nick is now going to go barf. He's been holding it in this whole time.
Video game.
Vincent Pella from Infinity Ward saying, with Call of Duty 2, we were dead set against it being World War II. But Activision really wanted it, and so we did it. They did it for dev kits for consoles in exchange for Call of Duty 2 as a World War II game so that they get it anyway. And then it goes on.
So you get dev kits?
Dev kits for we always wanted to be on consoles, and Activision saw us as more of a PC developer. And something I'll add to that: Activision also did not want Modern Warfare. They thought working on a modern game was risky, and thought, "Oh my God, you can't do that! It's crazy." They were doing market research to show us we were wrong the whole time. Which is just kind of...
Whoops.
Yeah, whoops. And
that's such bullshit that...
Like, they can't take... The big risk for Activision is we'll take our shooting franchise and put it in a different timeline.
Also, like, yeah. I guess,
that's a big risk.
Well, like, on top of that, I guess you guys can develop on a console.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
But only if you make another World War II game.
Yeah. That's pretty much where that would have went if we'd done on the podcast. But there it is.
I'm glad that Infinity Ward just... attention! This is what's happening with us right now. Attention.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Bullshit.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was kind of weird that they did that.
They like saying that sort of thing, though. They like... Yeah. Was that from Senior Super Douche Guy? Or was it from a different guy who said that?
Different guy.
Oh, you sound like you're just... If you talk too loud or get too animated, your body will just rebel. And
I'm afraid of laughing because my stomach is just grinding away.
Like, sorry, I really hope that you laugh and start barfing.
It hurts.
Sorry, laughing and crying and vomiting at the same time.
This thing has video now. Right?
Oh, God. Tune into youtube.com/idlevideos to watch Nick laugh, cry, and barf at the same time while reading this reader mail about Nano 1404.
Laughed, barfed, and cried at the same time, IGN.com.
You'll laugh, cry, and barf if you're Nick Brecken.
Not IGN.com.
Yeah.
All right.
I liked that someone updated the IGN. Was it you who updated the IGN Twitter feed? It was just like, don't go here. Or like, Rock Band, what's that? IGN.com. Oh, yeah.
I was like in the middle of doing that, and then someone else did it.
Yeah.
Okay. I wanted it to say musichub.ign.com as the attribution.
Oh.
But whatever, doesn't matter. It was good.
like the quote is Rock Yuzi Band
Chub.
Said,
yeah.
Yuzi Chub.
Yeah.
Has anyone else said that?
I haven't seen anyone say it. Hopefully it's the new ODST.
Like Muzy Chub.
Yeah. That's what it looks like every time I see it. I
M-U-Z-Z-Y.
Muzy.
Je suis le grand bête. Je suis la jeune fille. IGN Muzy Chub.